you know, they would have to be told by a reliable person that there is a probable cause, or that there is a search warrant, or that there is a court order. In other words, they can't simply go in and do what they're told without making some independent inquiry. And if the police officer says, assures them that there is a search warrant, or assures them that there's probable cause, that then that would be, they could use that as a defense against any subsequent suit. How would that do?
Madam Chair and Senator Shoemaker, that effectively is what this bill does. It shortcuts that.
It doesn't require the physician to ascertain, you know, to ask the question.
Certainly. Because that physician is in no position to make that judgment.
No, he has to is ask the police officer or the DA, do you have probable cause here?
I don't.
Do you have a search warrant?
Sure. I don't have any problem with saying, with maybe adding that, and saying the physician should inquire and be assured there's probable cause. The only difficulty I have is if the doctor is going to make that decision. Is that sufficient probable cause or not? Because what happens now is they will say at 3 o'clock in the morning, I want to wait until 10 o'clock tomorrow when I can call so-and-so in Portland.
I understand the problem.
Okay. That's the difficulty.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Senator Springer first.
Yes.
Do you have a question?
I just want to make sure I understand. There's reference in the letter we received from Mr. Anson's office that presumably this could apply to a stomach pump situation. Or am I correct that Supreme Court law speaks otherwise?
Madam Chair and Senator Springer, yes.
The evidence, you go in and the officer's hauls a person down and says, I want you to stomach pump this person because I think they may have consumed controlled substances.
Yeah, that would be possible. When I say x-rays, the situation I have that comes to mind is I had a man in a murder case that swallowed two jewels that were stolen from the victims, and they're like this. And we took an x-ray to establish where they were, and then we made arrangements to recover those gems. But there could be the situation as in Adams versus State or United States versus Crowder that talks about swallowing pills and the need to recover those. That could happen, and it comes down to the situation that the police officer and the local unit would be responsible for whether or not there was probable cause and legal justification to do anything. And if someone's going to be liable, they are liable. The doctor, as long as a medically acceptable manner is used, is not liable for that. And the responsibility lays where it should lay with the law enforcement agency. And so in this situation, the doctor's not going to be liable as long if there was a stomach pump, as long as that's done the way it's supposed to be done. But the police agency may be very much liable.
Well, there may be other body orifices that are also used to conceal contraband, as I'm sure your experience may tell you, out at our institutions, we understand that's a problem which is known to occur. Would this permit the officer to demand a procedure which would permit or direct the physician to enter other body orifices?
Madam Chair and Senator Springer, it would. But the distinction, and remember, it doesn't change case law, it doesn't change constitutional protections. It simply says if the doctor goes ahead and searches that body orifice in a medically acceptable manner, the doctor is not liable. However, that in no way excuses the request or the police officer or the governmental unit. There is a higher standard of probable cause to do a body search, and if that is not available, then that government unit, there is a remedy there, and there is the ability to sue someone. It's just that the doctor won't be sued as long as it was done in a medically acceptable manner.
Last question.
Senator Springer.
The warrant question, I think, is one that we've had some discussion about. It's my sense that the practice in Marion County, as well as most counties, perhaps not all, is that there's always a magistrate who's on call 24 hours a day. If you people need a warrant for whatever reason, absent permission otherwise under, quote, exigent circumstances to where you may be required to get a warrant, is that not the case? I mean, if you have an emergency and you need a warrant, you can get a magistrate a phone call away. Isn't that correct?
Senator Cohen, Senator Springer, I can tell you that even if I have a magistrate identified and available, it will take at least 4 hours to get a search warrant done. That is what happens. It takes time to gather that information, put it down in written form, get it typed, get it prepared, get it out to the magistrate, get it signed, and get it back someplace. And the difference, and it's a different issue, because the legality of it is something totally separate. This bill has nothing to do with legality of the search. The same protections are there. All we're saying is, if the officer has authority, whether that be court order, search warrant, or by case law saying that there's probable cause and exigent circumstances, that is something that the law enforcement people have to deal with. The doctor doesn't have to be a lawyer and make that decision, because the doctor only has to worry about medical technology. Am I doing the correct procedure? And that's all this bill does. You would still have all those protections and that legality of the search to deal with, but that would be focused on the law enforcement and the governmental unit, not the doctor.
I appreciate your comments. Thank you very much.
No. Senator Hill.
Yes, just one quick one, Madam Chair. Hill, when someone is arrested and their fingerprints are taken, are those fingerprints, are they only entered into the lead system if they're convicted, or are they entered into the lead system anyway?
Senator Hill, I believe they are entered, but I'm not a good person to answer that question.
Okay.
I know they're entered on conviction. I think they're also entered at arrest.
We can't even get them to take them on arrest, and it's not even. And I got to tell you that we can't even get them forwarded on for dispositions. So it's problematic.
Mm-hmm.
Problematic.
Thank you very much for your time.
Anyone else? Okay, let's move to work session. Well, we're missing two folks. Oh, there you are. Good. It's been 2 years. Let us move to Senate Bill 45, and we'll go right down the list of work session bills. 45, 46, 47, and 1041, and then we will get.
Senate Bill 45 is at the request of the Department of Transportation. This is one of the trilogy that we heard last week, and it has to do with the administrative penalties for driving under the influence of intoxicants. You recall Mr. DiLorenzo, who's present today, testified and explained that basically, the bill provides a single definition of repeat offender, so we do away with this mishmash of different ways of seeing that term used. And it also provides for more equitable waiting permits for hardship permits. There was some testimony that if a person has to wait any length of time at all as a result of a breathalyzer refusal or failure, then they don't have to do the subsequent wait as a result of the DWI conviction. What this bill does with respect to that is make those waiting times more equitable. That language is found at the bottom of page 2 and page 3 by basically, I guess the way I term it, is giving a person sort of credit for time served rather than all or nothing. And I'll leave it at that.
All right, and there were no amendments offered. Staff hasn't found the need to recommend amendments to us. Their motion on the bill. Senator Hill moves Senate Bill 45 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Call the roll, please, Pat.
Aye.
Robert.
Aye. Aye.
Shoemaker.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. Move to Senate Bill 46.
Senate Bill 46 is also at the request of the Department of Transportation. This is the bill that corrects what was basically an oversight in the revision of the Motor Vehicle Code. it adds in a number of offenses which, for which records of conviction should be forwarded from the courts to the Motor Vehicles Division. In our testimony, we have those. They're things like defective coupling device, excessive trailer sway, things that apparently were meant to be intended in the list of those offenses that somehow got inadvertently omitted.
Comments? Senator Brockman?
Madam Chair, I don't know that the convictions the courts will not report in here under the statement prepared by Joan Plank, signed by Jim Hunter for David Mumar, the director. Some of these things that are not going to be reported seem pretty serious to me, such as failure to yield to an ambulance or emergency vehicle. There are some other ones, and they're violations of posted limits on use. Some of those, I think, are pretty serious stuff. I don't know. I don't know whether that's what we're supposed to be treating here or not.
Actually, I think that those are in there now, and what we're adding, I think, is the additional ones. I need to have someone come forward to say. I understand that. Would you like to come forward and respond to Senator Brockman's concerns? These are pedestrian, passenger, moped, bicycle, and they do include all of them. So if you'd like to come and...
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Tony DiLorenzo from the Motor Vehicles Division, and Senator Brockman, the chair is correct. This list is the way it's always been. These are always things that the courts have never been required to report to us. In general, they are, what, bicycle, pedestrian, they're things that... Because what happens is we get them, we stick them on the driving record, and the legislature has felt that it was not appropriate to have...
Right, and the piece that this bill is dealing with, and I think there's probably something misleading, Senator Brockman, convictions will not report to DMV under Senate Bill 46. I think that ought to say convictions courts will not report to DMV under current law.
Okay.
And then we turn the follow-up to the next page, which says additional convictions courts will report to DMV under 46.
No, I understand, but the point that I want to make, Madam Chair, is that if there are some in here that
the DMV might
be interested in adding because of the apparent gravity of them, this would be the opportune time to do it.
Now, are there any of your lists that you want us to put back on that you think is appropriate? I think that's basically what Senator Brockman is requiring.
Yeah, failure to yield to an ambulance or an emergency vehicle, I think, is pretty serious stuff.
It is. Where is that in this list?
81406, no, wait a minute, the one right above it, 814050. I mean, there are some pretty silly ones in here, like the illegal use of the white cane.
Oh, I thought you got a pretty nasty ticket for doing that, for not doing that. But
I would assume so.
It would be in
the Madam Chair, Senator Brockman, the answer is no. I don't think there's any in this list that we would really propose that you ask the courts to send to us. 814050, for example, is failure of a pedestrian to yield to an emergency vehicle. I don't think we're particularly interested in that from the standpoint of the driving record.
No recidivism.
And you can't have any liability.
Don't go right.
Maybe we don't address the
law. It just occurred to me some of these are pretty serious infractions, and I just wanted to give you the opportunity, if you wanted to add them, that this would be the forum in which to do it, and if you don't, that's okay with me. I'll just shut up and move the bill.
Okay. Senator Brockman has moved Senate Bill 46 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Just because of that, we'll let you carry it, Senator.
That's why I did that. It's what I understand.
He didn't say he was going to vote yes.
No. Well, any further discussion? Senator Brockman has moved the bill, Senate Bill 46, to the floor. Call the roll, please, Pat.
No.
Aye.
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 All right. Motion carries. Thank you.
Senate
Bill 46. I mean, 47. Pardon me.
Senate Bill 47 is the last of the three, also at the request of the Department of Transportation. This bill does primarily two things. First, it brings some consistency to the statute by changing the term state to jurisdiction as it's used throughout. And the second, and probably more important, is it clears up some confusion over the classification of a penalty. And that penalty comes into play when a person is suspended as a result of a DWI, and as a requirement, their hardship permit is required to use the ignition interlock device. Apparently, there's been some substantial disagreement among some of the attorneys that have drafted the different bills, attorneys for the Department of Transportation and the DAs, as to whether driving without the required interlock device would be simply an infraction or a felony. If you'll recall, the testimony of the department was that regardless of which is accurate from the sense of interpreting the past statutes, their feeling is that it should be a felony. And that's what this bill does.
Chair. Point of information, could you describe an ignition interlock device to me? I hate to be ignorant of that, but I'm
well,
not
well, let's
quite sure.
Springer do that.
You're going to learn all about it here in a few minutes. That is a, it's kind of like a mini breathalyzer, which can be built into the ignition loop on the car. There's one vendor, I think, now making those and installing them here in the state of Oregon. It's a high-tech product. And it's generally found to be reasonably accurate in terms of determining whether or not a person has got blood alcohol or a certain level of blood alcohol in their breath. It's basically a mini intoxilizer breath.
You got to breathe fresh air or the car won't turn on, right?
Right.
Okay.
I'm sure you got it.
We in fact have one in the court in the hearing room today that you'll be able to see.
Okay.
Okay. There are no amendments?
No.
Move the bill.
Okay. Senator Springer moves Senate Bill 47 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Pat, call the roll, please.
Aye.
Brockman?
Aye.
Brinsky?
Aye.
Hill?
Aye.
Shoemaker?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye.
Holt?
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. Okay, let's move to 1041, Senate Bill 1041.
This is the last bill we have for work session today. It's at the request of District Attorneys Association and the Criminal Defense Attorneys Association. There are some amendments that have been submitted, and I believe that these are a joint effort between Dale Penn, the Marion County DA, and again, the Criminal Defense Attorneys Association. And they address two concerns that were brought up at the public hearing last time. The first basically brings in, well, first of all, this is the bill, I'll remind you, that addresses the situation that the Yamhill County District Attorney was faced with when he disclosed some information to a victim that was in a PSI. This bill would specifically allow attorneys on either side to make disclosures in preparation for sentencing. The amendments, which were just received this morning, would also bring in the sentencing and appellate judges to those exemptions so they can make those disclosures as well. And then the second amendment, which is sort of still up in the air, would change the day requirement you'll see down on line 23. That requirement would provide that the Department of Corrections has to have a PSI done a certain number of days prior to the sentencing. As it's written, the bill says 14 days. The suggested amendment that Mr. Penn has tendered is either 3 or 5 days. My understanding from talking to Mr. Penn is that Ross Shepard of the OCDLA would prefer 5 days.
Well,
at
that's
least.
Fine. What does the corrections department say? It doesn't change that then. Dale, you want to come up and speak to that momentarily? I assume that just has to come in.
I'm Dale Penn, representing ODAA on this bill. I put in the letter that the testimony that you received was that they believe that 3 days was a reasonable period of time. Criminal Defense Lawyers Association believes that 5 judicial days is really the most appropriate amount to ensure that you don't reset cases. And so I simply put it before you that it appeared that either 3 or 5 would be acceptable to everyone. But there has to be a decision which of those two. And I guess Corrections is asking for the 3. Criminal Defense Lawyers, because you have to have some time built in there so you can contact your client and set up a time and then go over that information, and you may need a couple of days before the sentencing to run down some additional matter that you've, or to recheck some additional matter that you just found out was in the PSI. So I personally believe the 5 is more reasonable. It comes down, though, to a policy choice there, I guess.
Okay, I do think it is one that the committee needs to reflect on your bill. Look at the bill. It is...
Madam Chair?
Yes.
As I recall, someone from the state...
Corrections Department
argued against the 14 days.
That's
saying
right.
That didn't give them... Have you heard from them?
Well, that's what we were just discussing.
They say 5's okay?
Maybe I wasn't listening.
Madam Chair and Senator Shoemaker, they said that 3 days they thought was a reasonable time.
Okay.
And that's where we're kind of down from
you
14 to either
better.
3 or 5. And that's the policy choice.
Sorry, I wasn't listening closely enough.
Yes.
Pardon me.
Anyone else have any ideas? I'd say I would think that if you have both the defense and the district attorneys believing that 5 is reasonable to work on what you have to deal with cases and clients, then I'm willing to support 5 and it may. What that means is you have to gonna either set the court dates, you're going to have to be a little more careful about what, pay attention to the court dates probably. Is there anyone from Corrections who wants to come up and debate this right now? There isn't anyone here, so obviously it's not going to be
Madam
a
Chair?
Break note piece. Senator Grinsky.
The only thing I'm sure that they're concerned about is there's a lot of information to be verified on one of these reports, and I have never seen them do them that quickly. I'm not sure.
No, well, if you see, we're not. They could have what they said. Normally, it's 50 days. Mm-hmm. They could still have 50 days as long as they got them to the court five judicial days before sentencing.
Well, that's true, but a lot of times there are modifications that get made to it after the defense counsel gets a copy. They will ask for clarification. Am I talking about the same thing? Pre-sentence investigation, right? Report.
Madam Chair and Senator Grinsky, I think certainly that will happen, and the whole idea is that you would at least cut some on indigent defense if you don't have additional appearances that people would have to charge for. We believe that setting some guidance here, gives some preparation time, would cut the vast majority of these continuances, but obviously there will still be some where that will just have to happen.
So 5 days would actually give the lawyers more time to work out those, to go back and forth and work out any debate they would have with pre-sentence report rather than 3 days.
I was thinking of the 14.
We're back.
You're done with 14.
We're done. We are. We have decided 14 doesn't work at all.
Okay.
We are looking at what they now have is a 56-day by rule that they generally use, and we're saying you got to have it to the defense and the district attorney 5 days before the court. I guess it's sentencing.
5 judicial days.
Yeah, 5 judicial days. So that's, they took a different approach to it. And
I see.
Practical matter, that's going to be a week, isn't it? Unless you have it there Monday morning. You're almost always going to need 7 days to have 5 judicial days. they're happy with it, so.
Okay, anything else? Would, I guess I'd, is the committee willing to support 5 days? And he said, is anyone who would object to the, to approving 5 days as a reconstruction of this language?
Judicial days.
5 judicial days as part of the amendments that you'll see in writing here from Dale Penn, dated April 17, 1989. Are there objections to the further amending that's included in Dale Penn's letter here regarding 1041, dated April 17th, which is also a part of what's been agreed to? And it has to do with the disclosure to the appellate judges that they can also disclose that information. Any objections to that? Hearing none. Those two amendments. 5 days. 5 days plus the first part of the amendment, as you see in the middle of the page. Anything else, Jack?
No.
Are we clear as to what we did, folks? Yeah. Are there to anyone who moved the bill?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1041 as amended to the floor through pass recommendation.
Senator Hill moves Senate Bill 1041 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended. Discussion? Call the roll, please.
Aye.
Senator Roth?
Aye.
Aye.
Senator Hill?
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker?
Aye.
Senator
Springer?
Aye.
Chair Collins?
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you. Senator Hill will carry this one. And Senator Rockland?
Yes, Madam Chair. While we are still in a work session, I forgot what I was supposed to say, but you know what I want to say. I'd like
Senator
to
Brockman.
Reconsider the yes. Vote by which we sent Senate Bill 46 to the floor.
Senator Brockman has requested, since he was voted on the prevailing side, that we reconsider our vote. Are there objections to that? Hearing none, so ordered.
Madam Chair, I was so concerned about some of these other things that were
the
not being
load.
Reported. I did not look at the leaky load. That is true. And I checked with Mr. DiLorenzo and asked him if, in the whale, as it was called in 85, if these were specifically amended out, and they were just simply forgotten, overlooked, as it were. And I would request that you give me till Wednesday to talk to some people about this, and we could put it up for a work session again at that time. Otherwise, I will be required to change my vote to no.
Okay. I'm happy to look for the leaking load to see if we're not catching any truck drivers who run around with toxic waste in their back.
Different kind of truck.
Of their load, right?
See, I seem to be somewhat at fault here for drawing this to Senator Brockman's attention. Maybe I could explain what I was doing voting no.
Well, I think you ought to explain it to all of us so we can vote no with you, Senator Brown.
I wasn't here during the hearing on this before, and
I apparently wasn't either.
Apologize to that, but remember last week when we were talking about children, and someone said that there were only three things that would cause a lot of controversy, and that was children and guns and land. And I always figure there's a fourth in there called trucks, and I've seen trucks and leaky loads. I wasn't sure whether you're talking about leaking strawberry loads or whether you're talking toxic waste.
Right.
But you get 500 and some convictions of leaking whatever, and all these start appearing on a person's driving record. There may be some concern out there about a shift in policy.
And I do think we need to check with PUC as well, because that's in some ways. That's the place where they regulate those issues. So we'll bring it back on Wednesday. Appreciate your calling it to our attention while we examine the leaky loads.
Madam Chair, I assume we could, if we desire, amend it to define leaking sifting load to be of hazardous waste products and not of ordinary farm products.
Right. Well, whatever it is, we will assume that they'll get back to us on the specific of it and address Senator Brenneman's and Brockman's concerns and all of our concerns.
A lot of leaking crab juice, too, on the Bayfront, you know.
Madam Chair, I'm glad we avoided a minority report on
this. All it takes is for people to speak up. Okay, let us move. We've got one more bill on the agenda today, Senate Bill 131. Let's move into 131. We have Robert Dudley from the Oregon Traffic Safety Commission and Peter Nunkamp from DMV. If you come up, we appreciate it.
Mr. Dudley, the Oregon Traffic Safety Commission, asked him with some amendments.
But that doesn't mean we didn't miss it. Go ahead, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Robert Dudley. I'm program coordinator for the Traffic Safety Commission.